welcome to First Things First. I'm Jen Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. Good morning, Nick Wright.
Good morning.
We got some preseason tonight. Lots of football to talk about today. Baker Mayfield says, bring on even more hype. We can handle it. Travis Kelce says the sky's the limit for an already sky-high Chiefs offense. And Aaron Rodgers making his debut with his new head coach tonight. A couple of highlights from last night, Dodgers and Marlins, and John Berti making a terrific running, diving grab on the outfield grass.
My man got some wheels. He was off on the crack of the bat. You see that, Nick, just like they teach in Little League, jump stop when the pitcher's pitching. Man, he got off. He had some speed.
Nice speed here. Chargers practice. Mike Williams skies over the defender for the touchdown.
Big year for Mike Williams now. Got to build on some success from last season. See if, I mean, they drafted him to one day overtake Keenan Allen as the number one. That obviously has not happened. We'll see if that duo has, in theory, could be one of the better duos in football.
Hadn't lived up to that first round draft pick, Jenna. And you're right, that wasn't a great catch, but he hadn't done a whole bunch.
Oh, that was a very good
Dolphins and Bucks joint practice here. Tampa Bay's Chris Godwin burns Xavien Howard with the one-handed catch. Howard, by the way, NFL's highest paid corner.
And one of the best.
Nice job here.
That's a nice little play by Godwin.
Come on, let's check out that right foot at the end.
Oh, he's not in bounds. I agree. Oh, speaking of that, I'm glad you mentioned that. You still owe me $100 from the last inbounds out of bounds. I'm glad you mentioned that. Good highlight.
Wait,
good.
That he wasn't in bounds there? No. It looked like he was. Look, one.
Wait,
no,
one?
Right there.
Two, yeah.
There,
you're right, Jenna. Jenna's right. My $100 is back. Good
Wait,
bet, Chris.
What do you mean?
Good bet. Way to go, Jenna. Way to go, Jenna. Instant replay.
What just happened?
Yes. Get even.
Love you guys. Moving on to the Browns now. So the last time Cleveland won a playoff game, Baker Mayfield wasn't even born yet.
Wait, really?
I wasn't even done with college. Yeah. 25 years later, with his team all but daring the league to beat him, Baker is fully embracing the idea of getting Cleveland back to the promised land, saying, quote, hey, people want to see us lose just because the hype is so real. Nick, what's your reaction to Baker's comments, and where were you 25 years ago?
We should do that.
Where was I? 25 years ago, I was in third grade. I was 9 years old. 25 years ago, Chris Carter was...
Was that the first time in third grade or the time they held you back?
Yeah, that's
right. So what, with 1995?
1995, Chris Carter was a two-time Pro Bowler at that point, maybe three-time Pro Bowler at that point.
1995.
You had just set the NFL record.
Yeah.
And Jenna, you were on your...
Still in college.
Yeah.
Young and in college.
I was getting ready to go for 122-17. That year.
Oh, yeah.
122 catches.
And 17, yeah. Warren Moon. So we were all in little
Where
different places. I was in third grade.
For the second.
Okay. So, listen, that was startling. I knew the Browns hadn't won a playoff game in forever, but it is interesting that Baker literally wasn't born yet. I don't look at the Browns as a hype team. I look at the Browns as a very, very promising team. And I disagree with Baker that I think he's creating a chip on his shoulder because that's what he's always had. I think he's creating a narrative that it can't be no one believes in us because you're talking about hype. It now has to be everybody hates us. But the reality is everybody didn't hate the Browns. People are rooting against the Patriots, some people, because they're sick of them. Some people are rooting against the Cowboys because they get so much coverage. People are either believe that the Browns are overhyped or they're more like me, and they're really excited to see what they can do this year. Even if it's not the team you root for, man, I can't wait to watch them on Sunday Ticket, see what Baker and Odell are going to be. But so I understand why Baker's doing this. In sports, for as long as sports have existed, the nobody believes in us chip has been a useful one and one that teams try to go to.
Worked for the Eagles.
Well, and even, I mean, what was it? Was it the Patriots last year that because they weren't the overwhelming favorites, they all of a sudden decided nobody believes in us? Even when it's fake, teams try to create it because that is a good go-to in sports. If you can't go to that, then the us against the world is the next best option. Everyone's against us. And so that's, to me, what Baker's trying to do, even though I don't think his commentary is exactly accurate with this.
Can I just say, I think what he meant was a little bit what Eric Mangini was on the Herd the other day, and he was telling Colin, the more that the Browns talk, the more opposing teams are looking on their schedule. Oh, we got the Browns? All right, pipe down a little bit. Maybe we get up a little bit more for this game. Maybe we have a little more edge to us in this game. So maybe it's less we hate you and more, oh, they're going to be gunning for us this season. Could it be that's what Baker means as well?
Every year there are several teams that through free agency and through the draft, there are great expectations. Jacksonville Jaguars were just like the Cleveland Browns. Except Jacksonville didn't have as long of a bad history, but they were not winning games, and they started drafting players. Jalen Ramsey started saying stuff, and then what people started saying, we're coming after the Jags now. They're coming after their head. So I'm not concerned about what the league is saying, because this is what I do know. If you are a good football team and you are a bad football team, when they toss that coin up and they say heads or tails after that, they are trying to knock your head off. So Baker and all players in New England, you know what they're saying? It's us against the world. All right? It's an overplayed phrase. Everyone is trying to utilize it. But Baker and them, they do have. There are people out there doubting because the product. We only saw 7 games with Baker because of the long history.
Seven wins with Baker.
And because of the long history that they've had as far as losing, it's hard to take them serious. Yep. And to me, they're young players. They have a very good nucleus because Baker being the leader and having success last year without OBJ. Just like when they went from Hugh, people forget what actually happened. They start playing some good, solid football. They start running the ball. They start protecting the quarterback. They started not just throwing the ball to Jarvis Landry. Before, when Hugh was there, Jarvis Landry was targeted 12 times. After Hugh left, he was only targeted less than 7. So they started attacking defenses with all their personnel. And then they added OBJ. And one of the huge component that Nick likes to talk about when him and I talk about is no one talks about their defense.
Right.
Myles Garrett could be defensive MVP. He could have 20 sacks this season, and Sheldon Richardson being added, Olivier Vernon coming over from the Giants. Like, this is a very good collection of young guys who have not accomplished a whole bunch in the NFL. Now they're going about it with the inexperienced coach, which I believe is the biggest question mark with Cleveland moving
forward. It's the big, that and their offensive line to a degree. Greg Robinson at left tackle is going to leave some people a little concerned. It's one of the reasons why some people have speculated, could the Browns be a team that calls up Washington and sees if they actually do want to trade Trent Richardson? Now that would be a true all-in move on Cleveland, who's already made a lot of very aggressive moves, or Trent Williams, not Trent Richardson, pardon me.
Yeah.
Trent Richardson's former running back. Trent Williams from Washington.
Yeah, that would be they can't trade back for him.
No, they can't.
They traded him to Indy.
They got a first-round pick for Trent Richardson years ago. But the other point on the defense is they made what I now, benefit of hindsight, in real time I didn't get it, but I think I understand it better now, made a savvy pick at number 4 with Denzel Ward last year. When everyone, I think everyone thought they were going to take the pass rusher, Chubb, they looked at it, maybe correctly, as you know what nobody has enough of in this league right now? Corners. And you know what we think we're going to be able to do is find a pass rusher to pair opposite Myles Garrett through free agency. They did it with Olivier Vernon. So they draft Denzel Ward to supplement their back end. But when we're talking about overhyped, to me, to be overhyped, you have to not only be hyped, but have nothing. It's all just thought. Like the Niners, to me, are overhyped. We haven't seen the Niners be good with this regime, with this quarterback, once. There hasn't been a stretch of time where it's like, wow, the Niners look
amazing. We gave them a pass, though. Jimmy G, and we like them. We like Shanahan. We like John Lynch. We're not criticizing them, but they have done nothing.
Done nothing. And a lot of people, Vegas says their projected wins is 8.5.
Vegas is projecting these guys to make the playoffs and to do well in the playoffs. And I know there were 3 games last year that had they won, they would probably be in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And win the division and beat the Steelers. I mean, there are people who said they could go to the Super Bowl. That doesn't sound like overhyped to you when we've not seen anything more than a small sample size last season?
This is the thing. What they have is real. They have what we're searching for. We couldn't have these shows if they didn't have the talk about NFL quarterbacks. So now we have a Heisman Trophy winner, not like a bunch of other ones, who can play pro football. Wow, his skills adapt to the pro game, and he's in a city that people would love to see a winner. Great football fans, the weather there, the character there. Yeah, it's not hype, though. Like, he's a good coach worthy to be a head coach in the NFL? I can understand if you're going to question that. But if you're questioning Baker Mayfield, his ability, you're wrong. John Dorsey, his ability to put together a competent team, hire a coach, you're wrong. And they got star players up and down, not only 22-year-olds. They got some 26-year-old, 28-year-old. They don't have a bunch of guys in their 30s. So if you look at a young roster, I don't see a more promising young roster in the NFL than the Cleveland Browns have.
And every year, there's going to be a third of the playoff teams from the previous year that are out and at least four new ones in. It's usually five. Some years it's six. So if you have to pick some teams that didn't make it last year. Sure. To me, it logic passes. How about a team that was only two games out of the playoffs, who was playing a rookie quarterback, who made a change at head coach that even though there's questions about Kitchens, to me, there's not questions about Hugh. There's answers, and they're not great ones. That also added the most talented receiver, one of the most talented receivers in the league, and a pass rusher, and has other young guys that you expect to improve.
Yeah.
It makes sense. Now, could they fall flat on their faces? Could Baker have a sophomore slump?
Of course.
Could Freddie Kitchens not know how to do anything regarding clock management? All those things are on the board. But if I'm out there and I'm like, man, who's going to be that was out last year in this year? I'd sure as hell rather pick the Browns than the Bills. They got a second-year quarterback. To me, it makes sense. The logic follows. Yeah,
if Freddie Kitchens was only the offensive coordinator and he didn't have any of that game experience that he had last year, then I would be more apt to say, you know something? I'm going to wait a year on the Browns. But I saw him. I saw him run their offense. I saw the control he had and the command he had of that room there in Cleveland. So I believe in it. So it's not hype. Talent is the most important thing. Chemistry, character, all those other things. I am a little bit concerned about their wide receiving core, spreading the ball around, body language on the sidelines.
Right.
I am concerned about those little type of things. But those are good worries to have.
Right. All right, let's take a break. Coming up, will we see Patrick Mahomes regress after his MVP season? That's next on First Things First. Time for us to go viral. Rams running back Todd Gurley will reportedly not be traveling with the team to play their Week 2 preseason game against the Cowboys. That gives him more time to spend with this little guy.
What's up, everybody? Finally got that cat I've been talking about, but I never had one before. Any tips? Say hi, little one.
Hi, everybody.
I've got a tip for Todd Gurley. Give it back. Cat's never going to love you. It's not going to show any loyalty to you. It won't know its name. Can't do anything with it. Can't walk it. If you open the door, it'll run away, hope to never come back. Cats are the biggest hoax in the animal world right now. What up, C?
Go on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Check out Rex Chapman. Dogs, bruh.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Dogs, bro.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed. Rex Chapman, great Twitter follower, and I know what you're talking about there. But, yeah, why would you – in what world would you opt if you can get a dog, a great animal, a loyal animal, a protecting animal, or a cat who would kill you if he could?
Nick,
why would you choose door B? Why?
Be careful.
The cat lobby is going to come after me?
The cat lobbyists of America,
the
they are strong,
fellows.
They are fierce.
Okay, yeah.
They are going to get together. They will be outside these studios when the show is over, and you will hear from them.
Well, I will die on this hill.
I hope somebody. That's what I hope for every day when I leave the studio. I hope somebody get in my way.
Oh. It happens about once every 6 months, and it is entertaining every time.
There goes my coffee. Time for stories to start your morning. Packers taking on the Ravens tonight. Aaron Rodgers will be rolling out this new Matt LaFleur offense as the starters plan to play a quarter or so. CeCe, what should we expect from the Packers offense under LaFleur this year?
I think Nick and I, when we talked about it before, multiple formations, less shotgun than what they did before. Also taking more deep shots down the field after play action. You get more of a realistic fake when the quarterback is under center and he goes to hand the ball off and goes into play action compared to shotgun where the ball it's hard to deceive the defender. So that's one of many things Matt LaFleur and the Packers look to change.
And clearly the scheme got stale under McCarthy, and Rodgers said as much without saying it in an interview this week when he said, last year we were really just hoping for guys to win their one-on-one matchup.
Line up, I'm better than you.
Exactly. This year he said he's excited because he feels like guys are going to be schemed open pre-snap. That's easier reads, easier completions, which can then lead to Aaron Rodgers only having to be brilliant in moments as opposed to the entire game. I'm really excited to watch this team.
LaFleur also said more of an up-tempo offense.
Yep.
He wants to see it go a little faster. All right, Matt Ryan will also make his 2019 debut tonight with the Falcons hosting the Jets.
Many wondering if Atlanta can bounce back after missing the playoffs last season. See, are people sleeping on the Falcons?
I think that they are. I mean, they have great personnel. Also, we tend to forget what happened the previous season. Their season was over with after week number one. Tough loss at Philadelphia. They lose three starters in that game. The next week, they lose a couple more starters, so their season was over with. They got Dirk Cutter as their offensive coordinator. I talked to Matty Ice at the Hall of Fame game, and he said it's going to be a hybrid offense. Part of what I like, part of what Shanahan did in the beginning, and part of what Dirk Cutter, back to your point, they're going to go more hurry up. Also, that's going to be one of the themes moving than the 2019 season.
I have no questions about the Falcons offense. They will have a top 10 offense. They likely will have a top 6 offense. I have a lot of questions about the defense, even if they get luckier when it comes to injuries. If they can have a top half defense, they'll be back in the playoffs. I'm skeptical if they can.
Also, they changed their defensive coordinator, changed their offensive coordinators, changed their special teams coordinator.
Right.
Watch for continuity as they start the first month of the season.
All right, you can add Amari Cooper to the Cowboys' long list of headaches. Their Pro Bowl receiver is reportedly dealing with a plantar fascia issue that will sideline him for preseason action. See, how serious is this injury for Cooper and the Cowboys?
Besides the knee injury, this is one of the worst ones for a wide receiver. When you're running your patterns, especially in cleats, because the cleats are being compressed into the hard surface, so right through your heel, you feel like a nail is going through your heel almost every step. A lot of wide receivers have struggled with it. Typically, when you get out of two-a-days, it alleviates some of the pain, but it is a chronic thing. Typically, will hamper you throughout the season. So let's just watch this. Watch Amari Cooper as far as his overall productivity, because this training camp, him and Dak were supposed to get up to speed because they haven't had any offseason work together.
I don't know if this is something you dealt with in your career or not, but I'm wondering, is other than rest, is there anything he can do?
Orthotics, change his shoes. A lot of times you have to go to Nike and have Nike put either like a steel plate in the bottom of the shoes or make you a special shoe that maybe you wear a 13 on one shoe, wear a 13 and a half on the other shoe.
All right, moving on. Tom Brady is gearing up for his 20th season, and with Brady fresh off celebrations of his 6th Super Bowl victory and his 42nd birthday, respectively, many wonder how much the GOAT has left in the tank. Chris Collinsworth was on the herd yesterday with a unique perspective on TB12 and some hard truth.
Has he declined? Of course he has. I mean, he's not, you know, he's not that age. But if you're declining and winning Super Bowls, that's pretty good, right? And so I think that Howie Long used to say that as your physical elevator starts to go down, your mental elevator starts to go up. And I think that's true for Tom Brady, too.
You agree with Chris, CC?
I mean, I love Chris Collinsworth. He mentioned another guy. Him and Howie Long are the guys that probably taught me before my ESPN days with Tom Jackson the most about TV. And how does it correlate what you know to what you're going to talk about? So he's got it right. And he's a huge fan of Tom Brady. But if you're analyzing the game, you can't look at Tom Brady and say, you know something, that's the way he was 5 years ago. No, he wasn't. We have seen him tail off. And he'd be getting more criticism if they had come up a little bit short in Kansas City.
Yeah.
If they hadn't won it or in the Super Bowl.
That game could have ended with his interception.
Yes.
I mean, it did for a moment with his interception, and then D Ford, they saw he was offsides. But, I mean, that could have been how that game ended.
Right. And we see the same thing with Drew Brees. We see the same thing with Phillip Rivers. We see a little less with Ben Roethlisberger because he's gifted more physically than the rest of them. But that's what you want. At the end of it, they're playing the position where the athleticism, it can keep going down as long as the elevator on the intellect scheme keeps going up. But what I worry about with Tom Brady is personnel. Yes. How many times are they going to just send him out there with just, like LeBron, 4 sheets of paper? Remember that in Cleveland? That's how all that went down. You know, you have to build support, and I know Belichick, their defense, he's going to be hands-on in the defense. The defense will be a top-5 defense. But at the end, you'd like to see Tom Brady have some little things to be able to work with. That's why they still hold on to the idea of Josh Gordon coming back. Because that's how desperate they are at wide receiver.
Well, to your point on the weapons, we can talk about the decline of Tom Brady because it's been all the way since 2 years ago when he won a league MVP. So we're talking about a one-year decline, but what was the deal 2 years ago in 2017? Oh, he had Brandon Cooks. And when he won the MVP in 2010, he had Gronk, Hernandez, and Welker. And when he won the MVP in 2007, he had Apex Randy Moss. And so when Brady has been, it was not that long ago that Brady had a brilliant season. I know they didn't win the Super Bowl in 2017, but he was extraordinary. He led the NFL in passing attempts and passing yards. They weren't no ground and pound team that year.
Nope.
They traded for Brandon Cooks. Gronk was still close to the Gronk we were used to, and they were out there slinging it. And they went 13-3 and won league MVP. Now, last year, we certainly saw some of the physical deterioration. He wasn't able to make all the throws, and he was, I think it was judicious. I think it was careful. You mentioned LeBron. I think it was similar to LeBron judging his energy on the defensive end. Brady went down early. Brady was not, he was not hanging out in that pocket when he didn't need to take extra hits. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the smart way to do things. But the other element to Collinsworth's comment that I found really interesting is he said the Howie Long quote, which is your physical elevator goes down, your mental elevator goes up. The concern for Brady, and this would be one of those good problems, but is Brady's mental elevator the last 5 years has probably been near the top of where it possibly could be. I can't imagine Tom Brady in year 20 knows a ton more football than Tom Brady in year 19. Like, he is, he said to you 3 years ago he has all the answers to the test.
Well, with the rule changes and new personnel, that's how you can acquire a different level of knowledge. Like, he's not used to working with these guys. He's got a rookie they drafted in the first round. That's not something Belichick does. So those types of things, it's not as if the elevator's going up. It's, I got to elevate to that level for this guy.
With new
people. And because I don't have Gronk, and because I'm not going to get as many attempts.
Right.
So I have to be more efficient with the attempts that I do get.
That's why it's so mind-boggling to me that they know and they have all the information that you have, that Tom Brady's at his best when he's got someone to throw the ball to. And yet, they don't seem to stack that offense with people he can throw the ball to. I mean, they had Gronk until Gronk basically flamed out and couldn't do it anymore. And they haven't really replaced them knowing where Tom Brady is in his career. And yeah, they're going to go into it with a stacked defense, and that's great. But you still have Tom Brady that you're throwing out there. Who's he going to throw the ball to? I don't know.
They're going to run the ball. They are going to run the ball. We have to believe what they are. New England adapts to their personnel better than any other team. Sometimes we don't adapt to what we're seeing.
I know.
But this will be one of the better NFL teams. It's just that it will be led by their defense.
And they are just so judicious with how they spend cap resources. If there was a good deal to be had, they thought there was a good deal to be had on a Brandon Cooks this year, they'd have done it. I don't think they're against giving him weapons. I think they will just only do it at the right price, and they won't compromise any of their principles.
Even in year
to get there.
120
Even in year 20,
for
they won't do it because they saw in
Tom
year 19
Brady.
He didn't have it. They still won the Super Bowl.
All right, let's move on to the Chiefs now. Coming off a season where they accomplished nearly everything but a Super Bowl win, where their offense led the league in yards and points, and where their young quarterback threw for 5,000 yards and 50 touchdowns, en route to MVP honors. Safe to say, Chiefs are in a good place coming into this season, but Casey's all-pro tight end Travis Kelce thinks this is just the beginning.
The sky's the limit for this offense. Just the guys that are here that have been here the past couple years, we're especially here last year. We're taking it up a level that we have in years past, and it's you can just tell from the coach's excitement to their attention to detail to how guys are reacting to their coaching. This team is going to be awesome, and we're going to have a lot of fun on the offensive side of the ball.
Nick, is Travis Kelce right? Can this offense actually get better?
Well, I don't know if they're going to have one of the top eight scoring offenses in the history of the league again, but I think the offense can present more problems for defenses. I think the kid they drafted to replace Tyreek Hill, but now you still have Tyreek Hill in Mecole Hardman, who has really turned a lot of heads at training camp as kind of a lesser version of Tyreek Hill. Track speed, you know, amazing as far as ability to get down the field. They're going to be able to put out there as far as receiving options. Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, Sammy Watkins, Mecole Hardman. If Sammy Watkins is your third option, which is what he will be when he's out there, that's a hell of a weapon to have. If you were starting a team from scratch with Patrick Mahomes as your quarterback, the first wide receiver you might pick would be Tyreek Hill, and the first tight end you would pick would definitely be Travis Kelce. Of all the players in the league, and they already have them. So I have no concerns about the Chiefs' offense, none. I don't think Mahomes is going to regress. I don't think all of a sudden defenses are going to figure it out. The concerns are they made a lot of changes on defense. Did they get actually better on defense? They changed out defensive coordinators from Sutton to Spagnuolo. They brought in Frank Clark, but at the expense of Dee Ford and Justin Houston. They bring in Tyrann Mathieu, but at the expense of Eric Berry, who didn't really play last year. How will the defense go from horrible to just below average? That's what will determine if the Chiefs actually make it to the Super Bowl. I don't think an offensive regression is going to hold them back this season.
Well, NFL history tells us they're going to come back. They're not going to be able to duplicate it. The greatest shows that we have seen offensively, that next year, typically they came back to the pack. I don't know, Nick, if there's a team that backed up a record-setting performance with being able to reach that level. Even the greatest show on turf, they came back. The 98 Vikings, they came back. The Pats, Randy Moss and Brady, they came back. So, yes, we should expect that. That's what NFL history tells us. But I'm not going to concentrate on the defense. I'm going to wait-and-see approach. Their offense is going to get a lot better if their defense can just stop a nosebleed instead of a punch to the face.
Right.
All right? Like, they were awful. And they are not the team they put on the field last year. I know they got close with New England. But their defense was so bad, you can't have a championship team. That would have been the worst defense that I can remember in the last 25 years that won a championship. If they were able to get through that and then finish off the Rams in the Super Bowl. So for me, offensively, can they be a little bit more? I know they got a lot of speed. Can they be just a little more ball control? Can them acquiring Carlos Hyde, which I believe still has a lot of good football in him. I believe the mix of him and Damian Williams, but Carlos Hyde being able to convert a lot of those third downs in shorts. And now, if I'm Andy Reid, I know my defense. I don't trust them. I'm like Belichick used to be a number of years ago. I don't trust them. Peyton Manning going to drive down the field. I'm going to go for it on fourth down. Put Carlos Hyde in there, and now they have a team that can go for it on fourth down. Late in games, you can put him in, and he can milk that clock. You can't always be an explosive team like you are. There are some games you have to get into where you have to control the clock. That 98 Vikings team, we had a 10-point lead in the NFC Championship against the Falcons, but we couldn't control the ball. Yes, one of the most explosive teams ever, but when we needed two first downs to be able to keep that clock moving, we couldn't get it, gave the ball back. Our defense did what they normally do, open up the front and the back door. Atlanta went down twice in a row and scored back-to-back, and now we're going to overtime. So for me, let's be a little more physical on that offensive side. Let's get time of possession. They're not going to win time of possession because they're going to score a lot of points. But let's try to get maybe a minute and a half more per game.
I think it's a really important point. And I think you look at it and you're like, man, don't you just want to score as quickly as possible? Kind of. But your point on what it does to your defense, especially if it's a bad defense, you having been in not just because you played, but on that specific team, very similar to last year's Chiefs team, amazing offensive weapons and scored quick. The Chiefs had 34 touchdown drives last year that were 3 minutes or fewer. That was the most in the NFL by a huge margin. They scored the most touchdowns of anyone in the league. Yet all year long, they only had 2 touchdown drives that went longer than 6 minutes. That was the least in the NFL. Right? So because it was so much quick strike. They had 27 touchdowns that were 5 plays or fewer. And so you think that is a compliment to your offense, but if your defense is that bad, it helps you, but not to the degree you think it should.
And I got bad news for the NFL, man. Tyreek Hill is just getting started. Last year was his first year as a full receiver, running crossing routes, playing in the slot, playing the Z some, running a bunch of reverses. Like, the overall responsibility that he had as far as the amount of offense he had to know, and now Andy Reid can grow that? Oh, my goodness. Tyreek Hill, to me, he's the most dangerous receiver in the NFL. Not the best. That's Julio Jones. But the most dangerous because Andy Reid, Patty Mahomes, and the other people around it, I'm really excited to see where he takes his game to in 2019.
Going to be a fun team to watch. All right, take a break. Coming up, will the hype be too much for Baker and the Browns this season? That's still ahead on First Things First.
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So, to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF.
Back here, first things first, we're joined by former All-Pro running back Brian Westbrook. Good
What's
morning,
up, sir?
Brian.
Good morning. Football's back.
Football is back. Yeah, we got a lot to talk about.
Before you get started, man, you need to know there's some new rules on First Things First. We're going into year number three. It's hashtag year of the truth.
Okay.
We had Bart Scott out here a couple days ago. I'm breaking down, analyzing the analysts as they go through the segment. So if you're here for three or four segments, if you don't do well on the first one, not saying you will, but Bart didn't.
Okay.
I had to get a trash bag. He was so bad.
Yeah. He literally got a trash bag.
Now, yesterday, Canty responded well.
Big.
But I just want to warn you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Okay. I appreciate the
You're
truth.
Number three.
Absolutely.
Hashtag
so you
telling
know,
the
you,
truth.
Since you're an all-pro, just like our friend Chris Carter was, you get to evaluate him as well. I'm gonna extend that.
Yeah, all good.
Courtesy
yes.
to you.
Yeah, I was wasn't good in the A's and the B's. I was spectacular.
Hey, in 2018, the Cardinals traded up to take Josh Rosen with the 10th overall pick. They said they found their guy. In 2019, they traded away Josh Rosen and used their number one overall pick on Kyler Murray. Surprisingly, they told us they found their guy again. Cardinals GM Steve Keim offered up a little clarity yesterday, saying, quote, all right, taking this guy number one, I took a lot of grief for that. You have to make the tough decisions and avoid the outside noise. Why'd you give up on this guy? Why would you trade this guy? It's unprecedented. I took Rosen in the top 10. I just felt that Murray was a generational talent that I just couldn't pass up. Brian, do you believe that Kyler is a generational talent?
Well, first of all, I think the general manager has to say that. I think he's in a position where you made all those decisions, moved all those draft picks to get Josh Rosen, and then he doesn't come to the table and bring wealth and wins to that organization, and you move on from it, and then you draft a 5'10 quarterback. You have to believe that he's a generational talent. And you know, for me, here's the thing. I think generational talents are players that you can drop in any offense, on any team, and that team gets better automatically.
That's fair.
I don't know that Kyler Murray is that. I think that the air raid offense has to fit him perfectly for them to be successful in Arizona. And I think this offense does. It fits the things that he does very well. He understands it. He knows it. He's had run a version of this offense in college. I think he's going to be very good at it. But can you drop him in a traditional offense? Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. He's not going to be a guy that can stand in the pocket and throw the ball 35 times a game because he's a little bit smaller. You have to do some different things. Roll the pocket, do some things, get him on the edge to make him useful, to make him and say he's a generational talent. You're dropping him anywhere, and he's going to be successful. Peyton Manning, guys like Andrew Luck, generational talents. Andrew Luck certainly hasn't played out that way, but coming out of college, he was a generational talent. I'm not sure that Kyler Murray is that yet.
Yeah, Jenna has got it right. I mean, they have to be all in.
Yeah.
Because of what they did at coach. Not only did they fire their coach last year after one season, which wasn't fair to him, and then getting rid of Josh Rosen, which wasn't fair to him. I can understand. If you feel like you got Andrew Luck in the pipeline, yeah, someone like that, as far as that label, generational talent, I'm just going to wait a little bit, all right? And I have the fact, I've been covering this league for a long enough time, there are certain people you just can't jump out and say they're going to be this, they're going to be that. I'm going to tell you who Kyler is, though. He's a combination of the NFL being upset at themselves that they missed on Russell Wilson. All right? They missed on him out of Wisconsin. He had all the credentials off the field. Was also a professional baseball player. Mm-hmm. Led North Carolina State to a bowl game. Transferred over to Wisconsin in that fifth year. 2 days on campus, they make him team captain. He leads them to another New Year's Day bowl game. And you know what? Because he's 5'10", third round is as high as he can get. And then after that, in college, we saw Baker Mayfield. And then Baker comes out last year. And I know what these general managers are. And Steve Keim's like, I'll be damned. I'm on the hot seat, too. Just imagine this. When you were watching Lamar Jackson in college play for Louisville, you said, man, what would he be like if he could throw? If he could throw, he would be like Kyler Murray.
Yep.
And that's why the Arizona Cardinals, all those things have happened in the league. Russell has been successful on and off his leadership. Kyler has that little quiet confidence, a lot like him. General managers know they missed on Russ. General managers started coming around on Baker, even New England. If he had slipped a little bit, New England was trying to get in on Baker. So they're giving these smaller guys more of a chance. But saying that he can play in the 60s, 70s, 80s, no. Let's just slow down a little bit. I do believe he is a special, special athlete. High school football might be the greatest football player in the state of Texas. Did not lose a game. So for me, he was worth the risk, Nick.
So I went to high school with a kid and was good friends with a guy who my whole time growing up wanted to be an Air Force pilot. Only thing he ever talked about, wanted to be an Air Force pilot. Was reading Air Force books in junior high school, focused on it, did all the things you need to do. And he was a basketball team in mind. And he just kept growing. And he kept growing, and he kept growing. It was great for basketball. And all of a sudden, never stopped growing. 6'6", almost 6'7". Guess what? Not allowed to be an Air Force pilot. You got to fit in the cockpit. And he had everything, done everything right, fit past everything, but was just a little too big for the job. That is the only thing that is my concern about Kyler, but in the opposite direction. He checks every box. Never lost a game in high school. Great. I was in Texas when he was in high school. It was Paul Bunyan stories about what he was doing for that team. We saw him in 1 year of college football break all of the records Baker had just broken that had lasted in college football for 100 years. But is he just a little too small? If he's not, then A, it opens the door to a lot of future guys in college football that we have decided are too small. If he's not, it also might make people reevaluate. Wait, did we make a player change position that we shouldn't have made change position? There will be a lot of revisionist history on who could have been.
Which there was, but when Russell Wilson became successful.
Absolutely,
there was revisionist history on that as well.
And by the way, Russell Wilson was very fortunate. He was drafted by the organization that he did, that he was, because there's a lot of teams that if they would have taken him in the third round with a quarterback they had just signed, he would have never gotten on the field, even if he had deserved to get on the field. So my concern with Kyler is simply, does he not pass the height threshold? Now, people probably had that concern about you to a degree in a very different position, and you obviously proved there is no height threshold if you're good enough, at least at running back. Does that apply to quarterback? I'm not as certain.
Yeah, that's a big question. I think the size thing, and I faced it my entire career. So I think you go into the league with a chip on your shoulder, and Kyler Murray, he has the ability, talent-wise, to handle all those types of questions. He's done it his entire career. Best thing for Kyler, and you kind of mentioned it, is that he's going to an offense that's going to focus on his strong suits, the things that he does very well. The offense is really built for him. He understands the offense. He understands the small nuances of the offense. He'll do a very good job. Generational is a whole different story, but he's a talent, a super type of athlete. That's what you want in a player, especially if you're going to draft him first overall.
2 weekends ago, I went to the Hall of Fame. It's the room of the greatest football players ever. And it's only a couple small guys in there now.
Yeah.
Now they're special. Darryl Green, bunch of special little guys, but not a whole bunch of them. Like, all the people in the league, Westbrook will tell you this, all the small guys, ain't none of them saying, I wish I was smaller. All of them saying, I wish they were bigger.
That's right.
Just like the guys who couldn't run, like myself. Uh-huh. We wish we were faster. So, man, people saying height don't matter, that's a short guy talking. Don't listen to him.
Height doesn't matter. Don't believe that. Height doesn't matter. It's your heart. That's what you got to have.
Everyone in that Arizona organization succeeds. If he succeeds, it's all in their best interest for them to put the right personnel around him, the right offense around him, and make sure he looks good on that field. All right, Brian, stick around. Coming up, are Aaron Rodgers and the new-look Packers still a threat to win the NFC? That's next on First Things First.
You earned your spot in the East. Yeah. That was nice. You came out pumping.
Those are short guys' comments. Height doesn't matter.
Here, Brian Westbrook talking Packers. Aaron Rodgers getting set to take this Matt LaFleur offense out for a spin tonight against the Ravens as the starters plan to play a quarter or so. All the preseason talk about the coach-quarterback relationship on full display tonight. Brian, what should we expect from the Packers offense under LaFleur this year?
You know, I think you're still going to see a lot of the same. Aaron Rodgers throwing the football down the field, finding a way to get the ball to Davante Adams. I think what you want to see, and everybody in the league wants to see, is them have some balance. They were the league's worst run team last year. I'm talking about 21 attempts per game. In my day, that was your starting running back, just 21 attempts.
That's right,
just
you can
one
chart
guy.
That off.
Yeah,
that's,
you
them 65 plays, 21 of them gone.
Absolutely. And so, you know, when you have a team that's going to throw the ball 40-plus times because you have that type of talent at quarterback, of course you want to be able to do that. You have to have some balance. Green Bay has already seen that you can't win Super Bowls without having some balance. Here's a big thing that I want to see from Aaron Rodgers and Matt LaFleur, too. Will Aaron Rodgers trust him? And you won't see it in the preseason because it's, you know, listen, Aaron Rodgers is going to go out there. He's going to run the plays that are called. But will he trust Matt LaFleur in the third and fourth quarter when it's third down and five and he has a run play called? Will he trust him when it's fourth down and two and he has play action and he's trying to get the ball down the field? Will he trust him then? Or will he change the runs to a pass and sometimes pass to a run? Rarely ever does. Quarterbacks rarely go from pass to run. But will he trust him enough to trust his play calls, especially in those crunch time situations?
And Aaron and Matt LaFleur sat down with Robert Mays, and I thought they both had some really interesting comments. And one of them was where Aaron said, listen, I need my autonomy in two spots in particular, the red zone and 2 minute.
Mm-hmm.
And Matt understands that.
Yeah.
That in the red zone, it's so much about what I see. And in 2 minute, we got to be able to go fast. So I can't be waiting on you.
In a 2 minute drive, if there's 32 starting quarterbacks, 30 of them, the quarterback is calling the plays.
Yeah. Right.
The other two are guys who just started starting, and the coach and the quarterback are alternating. So what Aaron is saying, I can't have somebody talking in my ear. I don't need that. He should have at least that, because even great quarterbacks have that full control.
And it seemed like in this piece that what Aaron was saying was, he's going to give me that, and I'm going to give him what you're talking about. The trust in, I'm going to be under center a hell of a lot more than I used to be. We're going to go from being a team with almost no pre-snap motion about 25% of the time to a team like the Titans that had pre-snap motion more than 50% of the time. Why does that matter? Well, it's just less time for Aaron Rodgers once the players are actually where they're going to be to look at the defense. And he's going to, and this was the biggest hurdle for Matt Ryan, his 2 years when Matt LaFleur was the quarterback coach. He's going to be under center, which means in play action spots, he's going to have his back to the defense for a quarter second. And that's, Matt Ryan said, man, that was my hardest adjustment.
Yep.
I like to be able to watch that defense the whole time.
Yes.
You're asking me to do play action from under center, I'm going to have to turn my back. And Aaron said, I think it was at a golf tournament or something with Matt Ryan, where he talked to him about that specific adjustment, where you are taking what is your maybe second best asset after your arm, your eyes, and putting them away for a moment during the play because it's what the play calls for. That's what Aaron's going to have to adjust
to. So explain it to me, because I don't understand. Why would you take something away from arguably one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time? If he says, oh, I'm really good at this, why would you say, all right, I will give this to you and I will let myself do it your way? Why not do it Aaron Rodgers' way if he feels comfortable and let Matt LaFleur work on things that didn't work last year?
Because every horse needs a course.
That's right.
All right? And as much as Aaron Rodgers knows, you can't take the cameras, all the coaches in the booth, all that information, all that wealth of knowledge that they have, and be like, no, Aaron, we believe what you're seeing is better. No, it's better off when they work together. So Aaron's ability, feel for the game, yes, we are going to utilize that. But we have a system, and the system is, first of all, we're going to make the defense more physical. Offensively, we're going to get back to running the football, because if they don't run the ball, I don't care what kind of play action you have, it's not going to be effective. So Aaron's got to buy into going under center, also believing in those running plays because they're going to set up the play action for him that now Aaron, once he gets out of the into the pocket and into his passing motion, you have the threat of a run, which is what the coaches want. And now Aaron's still quarterbacking, delivering the ball down the field. Both of these guys, I believe, should be very happy. But I'm expecting the same thing that I expect from my kids in high school when I coach them. I tell them when you show up, submit your talent to the coach every single day. Aaron Rodgers, LeBron James, both of them have new coaches late in their career. They've been very successful. I want them to do the same thing. Vogel's going to have some rotations defensively. I don't care if LeBron can't get there. I need his body language to be positive and act as if he's buying in. Aaron Rodgers, the same thing. Get back to what got you into the game. And I believe both of them will do that. And it's important for their franchises if they want championships.
The hardest thing for veteran players, especially successful veteran players like Aaron Rodgers, is to adapt something new. To say, I'm not going to do what I've done that made me successful, being able to see the defense, and I'm going to turn my back and allow the defense to see my back, and I'm not seeing the field. It's very, very hard to do, especially later on in your career. Aaron Rodgers has to understand, to your point, CeCe, that the betterment of this team, if you want to win, then we have to change things. Or we can keep doing it the same way that you and Mike McCarthy did it for years, and you call the plays and you kind of disrupt the coach. Or we can actually try to win, do something different. We're going to run the ball a little bit more. Mm-hmm. We're going to play to our defense a little bit more and try to win that way. That's where Aaron Rodgers has to be sold. Winning is better than you just getting great stats and us not winning.
And, Jenna, to answer your question maybe in a different way, the quarterback might put in the longest hours at the facility of any of the players, but nobody puts in the hours the coaches do. The coach is there before everybody and they're after. And we look at it as Matt LaFleur's mind. It's Matt LaFleur's mind combined with the staff, the coordinators, everyone. So what those guys are doing in the week leading up to it are seeing things that while Rodgers is practicing, while Rodgers is rehabbing,
of
tendencies of the defense that he then has to trust. Wait, why are they telling me to do this? It's because those sleeping at the office, ridiculous hours, they see, oh, when the corner shades him this way, this is what you can expect. That's where he can learn from Matt LaFleur.
Another thing that Green Bay and that organization know, they do know the Minnesota Vikings sacked the quarterback 50 times last year. Aaron Rodgers, up close and personal, has felt it two seasons ago, knocked out. And Chicago Bears, 50 sacks. Yeah. They got 100 sacks between the two teams coming after them. If they don't get physical, if they don't provide some play action, Aaron Rodgers will have those guys in the backfield, that being the Vikings and the Bears.
We'll get to Matt Ryan in a second, but first, check out Jake Clark, the jumper, with the 360 honey dip in a dunk contest in Shanghai. Is the honey dip the stain that's the stain on?
It's hanging, it's hanging your elbow in the rim. Vince Carter invented this. The dunks that Vince Carter did in that famous slam dunk contest, greatest slam dunk contest ever.
Yeah, dude cheated the 360, though. He got a running start. He got halfway around. You see that? His back was already to the rim.
195 instead of a 360, but still a great dunk.
Chargers practice. Mike Williams skies over the defender for the touchdown here.
Jenna was looking at me like, Chris, why we got this in the highlights? The reason why, Mike Williams hadn't lived up to the expectations. That top 10 pick out of Clemson, not doing the type of damage they thought he would opposite of Keenan Allen there with the Chargers. Big year for him.
Huge year for him to realize some of that potential, and they should be one of the best duos in football.
Dolphins, Bucks, joint practice. Tampa Bay's Chris Godwin burns Xavien Howard with the one-handed catch. Howard, the highest paid, one of the best corners in the league, too.
Oh, he definitely is. He's earned that paycheck, even though he's playing there with the Dolphins. He doesn't get the hype nationally that other. But Godwin, this is a great catch. Leaving the quarterback just enough room. Did he get his second foot in, Jenna?
Let's bet
50 on it, Jenna. Bet 50 with Nick.
Okay, good, because I think he did.
I don't think so. And Jenna,
there.
I ain't betting with Jenna no more.
What?
Jenna, don't pay her
bet. Jenna, do pay her bet and did. All my bets are paid up with you.
Oh, check it.
What am I checking? Moving on to the Falcons now.
What you got?
Matt Ryan will make his 2019 debut tonight against the Jets, the former MVP entering his 12th season in the NFL. And with Atlanta coming off a disappointing season in which they missed the playoffs, many wondering if Matty Ice and the Falcons can fly under the radar, pun fully intended.
and get back to the postseason. See, are people sleeping on Atlanta?
They are. And the reason why people forgot what happened to them last season, they just thought, man, they underachieved last year. Well, yes, they did, but for a number of reasons. After that first game in Philadelphia, they lose at least two starters in that game. In the next 2 weeks, they lose another couple starters. So their season was already, the month of September, that they weren't going to be able to make the playoffs. They weren't going to be healthy enough. But from an offensive standpoint, we know they're always, as long as they have Julio, as long as they have Matty Ice, as long as they have Freeman in the backfield, they're going to be one of the most explosive offenses. And they have one of the best wide receiving core, tight end slashes that you, if you look at their personnel, they're skilled guys. They're five skilled guys. They're in the top five group of skilled guys. And Matty Ice, to me, is an underrated quarterback. So I believe the head coach does a good job there. But how does he overcome? He changed his special teams coordinator. He changed his defensive coordinator. Changed his offensive coordinator. Now Matty Ice, third coordinator in the last 5 years. Dirk Cutter's coming over from being the head coach there in Tampa. So Matty Ice is excited about the season. They have the offensive personnel in this new NFL. They're going to be a top five scoring team, Nick. So, yes, but in that division, right, where's the room?
Where's the room? And while people bring up the fact, oh, Atlanta got ruined by injuries, and it's correct. Well, another team in their division who was doing better than them halfway through the season got ruined by injuries too, but it was one injury. It was to their quarterback, Carolina. Carolina was 5-2, and then their quarterback got hurt. It wasn't five guys on one side of the ball,
right,
but it maybe had the same impact because it was their quarterback and it, what it did to his ability to play. The other thing, listen, Atlanta had bad luck in multiple ways last year. The injuries and that first month of the season, first and goal against Philly, the same way their season ended the year before, down six, first and goal, you can't punch it in. They then lose an overtime game to New Orleans where they never get the ball. Drew Brees just drives down the field. And in the first month, they lost Andy Dalton, I think it was Andy Dalton, threw a touchdown pass with 10 seconds left to beat them by one.
Yep.
So they had three games, could have gone the other way, and all the injuries, and it just kills you. And it's unfortunate because I think they had a really good window. The year they make the Super Bowl, the following year in the playoffs when they have a pass to Julio to beat Philadelphia, who went on to win the Super Bowl themselves, and then last year. I think this year they are not going to be as good as they could have been last year, as good as they were the year before. So no, I don't think people are sleeping on them. I'll tell you a couple teams I think people might be sleeping on. I mentioned the Panthers, that how good I thought they were last year before Cam got hurt, plus they had Gerald McCoy. I don't think enough people are talking about the Bears. If Mitch Trubisky can just be above average, and he was, you know, the second pick of the draft, they've got, I believe, a very smart offensive coach, a dominant defense that is not going to go anywhere. The Bears should have more, not playoff hype, but potential Super Bowl hype if Trubisky can just be good. He doesn't have to be great, just be good. You know I'm high on the Seahawks, and in the AFC, how much of what happened to the Jags last year was that the defense was not quite as good as it appeared to be 2 years ago, and how much of it was Blake Bortles just sucked the energy out of the room?
Right.
And just having Nick Foles there as a competent NFL quarterback, if nothing more, can get them back to where they were 2 years ago. To me, those are teams more likely to be sleeper teams, if you will, than the Atlanta Falcons. I feel like I know what the Falcons are going to be. An excellent offense, a below-average defense. They're not going to be awful, but I don't expect them to get to double-digit wins.
Well, we talk about sleeper teams. We should also talk about sleeper quarterbacks, quarterbacks we don't talk about a lot. We don't talk about Matt Ryan a lot. How good does he have to be for this team to be great? He had that great year, and then we just sort of stopped talking about him, assumed he was going to be the consistent on this Falcons team. What do you want to see from him this year?
Well, as Nick said, he's put this franchise where they had a window that was open. Now, is the window still open?
Yeah.
It's based on what type of change are they going to make to their defense? What kind of change are in their special teams to be able to support them? To me, he's an underrated quarterback. He got great personnel. They have a good scheme. I talked to him 2 weeks ago at the Hall of Fame game, and he said that it's hard for him now because he's been with so many different coordinators. But Dirk Cutter, sitting down with him, he was really excited because he was going to add something to, and it's hard to add to, Kyle Shanahan and my man Sark, who was there for a couple years. But he said, initial meeting said, we're not going to change that much. But what we're going to do is do a little more up-tempo, where you can be more aggressive, take advantage, make the defense show their looks, minimize their substitutions and play a little more college, play with a little more speed, play with a little tempo. So Maddie told me, this is not Kyle Shanahan's offense. It's not Dirk Cutter offense. It's not a Maddie Ice offense. It is a hybrid. He loves it and is looking forward to starting the season.
And, Jenna, you are spot on that Matt Ryan got the MVP in 2016, and then we act like he hasn't lived up to it since then. 2016, 2018 are the two numbers I'm going to give you. Completion percentage, 69-69. Passing yards, 309-308. Touchdown interception, 38-7, 35-7.
Wow.
His numbers were nearly identical the year he won the MVP and last season. The difference was they won close games the year he won the MVP,
yeah,
and their defense was better. And so Matt Ryan has not been the problem. Unfortunately, when he played that well last year and they won seven games, it's not realistic that he's going to play much better this year. So how much better can the team be? Yeah, they need to be more fortunate with health and with close games. I just think they're in maybe the toughest division in football, and I think they're the third best team in that division.
All right, Matt Ryan making his preseason debut tonight against the Jets. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. And catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.